Hey, listeners of Compliments to the Chef, it's your host, Nancy. We have an action-packed second helping today. First, we have LA Food Pod co-host Saul Achter joining us to talk about Last Chance Kitchen. And then stay tuned because we have current reigning champ of Last Chance Kitchen herself, Bailey Sullivan, talking to us on the pod this week. We are so excited. She dishes on everything from her journey to Top Chef, her time in the main kitchen, and what it's like to be in Last Chance Kitchen. So you do not want to miss this interview. Stick around. And for now, welcome to your second helping. Welcome back to Compliments to the Chef. I'm your host, Nancy. And this week, for our second helping, I have an incredible co-host, who is our friend from the LA Food Podcast, Saul Achter. Saul, welcome back to the pod.
Thanks so much for having me. This is such an honor to be here without Luca. Now I know who your favorite of the LA Food Pod hosts is, so it's good to have that in the bag. But it's a blast to be here.
You are definitely the spiciest of the LA Food Pod co-host. That's right. You come with the heat. You are not afraid to ruffle some feathers, and I am so excited. So we are going to talk about Last Chance Kitchen, of course. But before we get to that, I want to give you a chance, because I don't think you've had the chance yet, to just sound off a bit about your feelings about season 22.
Happy to. First of all, I just have to say, like, low-key, I kind of wish our LA Food Podcast was instead just a Top Chef podcast. Like, it's kind of like Luca sends me articles about LA food that we talk about each week, and some of them, like, I don't have anything to say about this really, but I always have something to say about Top Chef. So season 22 so far, I don't know if you remember, but when you joined us for our fantasy Top Chef draft a couple weeks ago, one of the things I said I was looking out for this season was hopefully a return to form with the quality of cooking and, like, the quality of chefs, because it felt like we hit a bit of a dud last season. And I gotta say, it looks like we hit it. Looks like we hit it out the park with the casting. It's been commented on multiple times by Tom, by guest judges. I think the level of this season, pretty much across the board, is almost operating at, like, a close to all-star level season quality.
Yes.
That makes me super excited. The personalities of the chefs are great. I love watching that. My only nitpicks so far, one is some of the like challenge twists they've done, like elimination challenge twists, like last week when they were like, all right, here's, like, you're cooking with maple, I think last week, right? I can't remember what it was. Like, here's your base challenge, and it's a good challenge. And they're like, also just, like, fuck with each other a bit, go to the grocery store and, like, give each other candy cane. And I was like, you don't need this. And it was also clear at judges table, they just didn't really care. They were like, oh, there's pizza on this bread. Okay. Like, I was like, what is this for? There was, like, an unnecessary thing. That I'm sure will get smoothed out. Small thing. But I was like, we're doing too much a little bit. That's nitpick one. Nitpick two, which is, I totally get it. We are stuffing the corporate sponsorship in this season.
Oh, and
I
get why.
I know why it's happening. But, like, Delta and James Beard table and, like, this and that. Like the intro video, the intro to each episode is, like, 30 seconds longer because Kristen has to name off all the other stuff they're adding. And look, each time a new Top Chef season comes out, Emily and I go back and watch old seasons. We just finished Kentucky earlier. We watched LA All-Stars. And I was like, I always go back and kind of compare it to, like, what we're seeing in real time. And of course, corporate sponsorship is there, but it was way more chill, way more natural. And now we're kind of, like, really laying it on thick. I know TV budgets must be in, like, tight right now, and I know why they got to do it. But if they tone that down a bit, if they kind of simplify the challenges, we have, like, an A-plus season on our hands, I think.
I agree across the board. I think that the corporate sponsorship stuff, I'm, like, less annoyed by, but very much notice. And I wonder if it's sort of like, okay, Top Chef is on season 22. Does it have to sing for its supper a little bit? Like, is Bravo perhaps getting a little tired? And Top Chef is like, but look at all the money we bring in. I don't know. I hope that it's not a sign of bad things. But the corporate, it's just funny. Like, when Kristen, as Bit said, like, jumped the contestants in the parking lot. Right. And was like, you're Wells Fargo, this, that, 2%
right,
back.
Right. Yeah,
like,
that's
oh
right.
Oh my God, just spit out what the challenge is.
I forgot that was why the twist was there. Like, the whole reason that stupid twist in the challenge existed was like, well, 2% of your budget is $50. Now spend that. And I'm like, first of all, that doesn't even sound that good for like Wells Fargo. Like, he's like, you had $2,500, you have 2% back, and it's only 50. I was like, that's not appealing, but it was so shoehorned in.
Yeah, look, Wells Fargo is just clawing its way back from opening up bank accounts for dead people. So, like, they're taking any good publicity they can get. I would say that the one thing I want to see more of, and I hope that this comes true in the very near future, because I, too, watch old seasons. I'm currently watching Boston, which is an insanely good season.
Classic, classic.
But we need some large format challenges. Like, we need serve 100 guests. We haven't gotten any of that yet. We've had 3 episodes of, like, group, I wouldn't even call them team challenges, sort of like group challenges. And, you know, I'd love to see a large format challenge. Feed this many guests for this amount of money.
Totally agree. We just actually started Colorado. Now I forgot about that. We are on to Colorado. I am ravenous about Top Chef. And literally by week 2, they're serving 200 people.
Yeah,
and you're
kind
of getting a sense of like who can like work and think quickly under those circumstances. Now, in the past, I've preferred the small table, like, you know, whatever, the small group of 12 chefs you're serving, because it seems to give people more room to get creative with, like, just 8 dishes versus, like, 200. But it's still a part of the game. So I'm sure it will come around, but and soon.
Every type of challenge has its merits.
Yep.
It's more just, like, you know, I want more balance, especially at the beginning of the season.
Totally.
Like,
totally,
even
totally.
Last season, Wisconsin, episode 2 was Cheese Fest.
Yeah, so, that's right. Yeah.
You know. But, okay, let's get into Last Chance Kitchen. So we're coming into week 3 of Last Chance Kitchen, and we have Sam, Bailey, and then new welcome to Last Chance Kitchen, Anya. And immediately – we have the bombshell that Sam is removing himself from the competition.
Yeah.
What do we make of this?
Well, what I make of it is, what is going on? What is going on? It's like, because now we've had 2 seasons in a row and where a chef has quit and 3 total chefs. We had David, who was just like, fuck it, I'm not showing up.
Yeah.
I'm out of here. We had Kalina also bail out last season about midway through. Mm-hmm. And now Sam this year. And I'm wondering why. Like, I think what I've heard, and I can't remember where I heard it, like, when you do Last Chance Kitchen, you have to stay, like, sequestered, like, as part of the TV show for a while, right?
Yes.
And as you're doing that, you're not getting, like, Top Chef level exposure. Like, you're on Last Chance Kitchen, but who knows if the weeks you're spending away from your restaurant or family are really worth the time you're going to end up getting on Top Chef. So I get it from that respect. What I will say is Sam's departure really made me like, we should be done with like the surprise chefs in Last Chance.
Yes,
Kitchen.
I think that this is the last time we'll see this as a result.
Yeah. It was like totally like on the fly done last season because of David quitting. And they brought in Sue, that's right. Sue has like a cool alternate. And this year they try to integrate it a bit more by like having 2 Canadian chefs, right? Come in and like I don't know if people don't know what they're signing up for or what the deal is, but it's super weird just to have people be like, yeah, I mean, this was a terrible, like, really hard decision. Where it's like, no, it wasn't, dude. You can't wait to get out of here.
And why do they have them do it on screen? I mean, I guess like it's hard to explain it away, but like, and then Tom being like, okay, let me think about how to change the challenge.
So like, funny. So funny, by the way. Tom being like, I did not see this coming. What will our new challenge be? And like doing a slow, thoughtful walk where it's like, come on, bud. Let's go.
Speeding along. And he literally like puts his hand to his soul patch and is like,
Yeah.
But yeah, we get there eventually. I will also say just a very quick shout out to friend of the pod, number one girly, Charlotte Rose Coleman, the stylist of Top Chef, because she got to kind of have her day in the sun with all of these Tom's hats.
Yes, totally. It was great
to happen.
Absolutely. Love that Tom has a sense of humor about it. And love that, like, they actually did tie it into, like, a Canadian thing. Like, the tradition at a hockey game is to throw hats on. It totally made sense. Really funny. Charlotte made an appearance on, I think, the first Dish with Kish this year.
She did.
It was like seeing a legitimate celebrity. I was so psyched. So the actual challenge was a great conceit and so funny to see all the different Tom hats.
Yes.
For a second, I thought they were going to have to cook food that like matched the vibe of the hat.
I had no idea. Like, I saw sort of like a clip on Instagram before I watched Last Chance Kitchen that just was like a photo of the hat, like the tiny Tom heads. And I was like, what on earth could this be? I have no clue. But it was a cool challenge. So for those listening at home, as a reminder, the chefs had to cook as many dishes as possible. And the first person to get three Tom's hats, which is essentially like Tom approves of the dish, would win the hat trick. Yeah. A hat trick being when someone scores three goals in a game.
Yeah.
A sports thing I did know, by the way.
There you go.
I know very little, but I did know what a hat trick was.
There
and
you go.
So Sam self-eliminates. He's off. And then so now Tom says, okay, we'll change it up a bit. You have 45 minutes. Make as many dishes as possible. And the first one to three wins. So it's essentially the same challenge.
Actually, quick, I think it was initially it was going to be the first two people to three good dishes won when Sam was part of it.
Yes.
When Sam left, he was like, just make me three dishes. Like, it wasn't even who was first. It was like, you both have a clock on, make three dishes. Because in the initial, I actually really liked the idea for the initial setup, which was no clock, make three dishes. Because that's like, then you have to strategize, like, how quickly will my competitors make their dishes? How quickly do I want to make mine? Mm-hmm. All that. And then when Sam bailed, they were like, 45 minutes. Make me three dishes.
Yes.
Doesn't matter. Like, just get it done.
Yes. And the idea was either one of you can move on or both of you can move on. But elimination would only happen if the cooking is not up to par.
Yep.
So, yeah, we start right out the gate. So Anya and Bailey are going head to head. And Anya gets the first dish up to Tom. And it's a cauliflower soup. And Tom really likes the dish. It looked tasty.
The main edit main feedback I had was I think it took them 30 minutes to get their first dishes out.
Yeah.
And it's like, guys, what are we doing here? Like, Bailey's first dish was a tomato salad. And I'm like, do it in 15. Just like, go. Let's go.
I too was surprised that the tomato salad took that long. However, they are like simultaneously preparing the other dishes. Like she was putting stuff in the oven for others. Like I wasn't so surprised that they didn't get dishes up in the first like chunk of time. 30 minutes did seem long.
Yeah.
But I have to imagine that they're prepping things for dishes down the line and like doing multiple things.
Totally. They're juggling a lot of plates there. Mm-hmm. But what I will say for the cauliflower dish and the tomato salad, which ended up being Bailey's first dish, it was pretty clear early on that Tom was just like, get me edible food.
Yes.
the vibe wasn't like, is this like an A+ dish? It was like, is this like feasibly good food?
Yeah.
Is this an actual dish? Yeah.
Yeah, it did. I hate to say this. It did sort of feel like the bar was a little lower.
Yeah.
But that said, so both Anya and Bailey get their first dishes awarded with a hat.
Mm-hmm.
So that was great. And then Bailey brings up her second dish. Mm-hmm. Which is, it looked sort of like, I mean, it wasn't, but it to me rang a bit of like spinach and artichoke dip situation.
Yeah,
like it was totally. Sort of like a cheesy dip. Let's talk about the cracker she brought from home.
Oh, yeah, sure. Do you think that's like a fair thing? Like she brought up the crackers and Emily was like, you can just do that? You can just like bring grocery crackers and like give them to Tom?
She says that they make them at their restaurant.
Right.
My question is, and because you know that they're allowed to bring, like, they each get, like, a crate.
Yeah.
And they're allowed to put stuff from home that fits in the crate.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that things could be perishable in that crate.
Yeah, totally. Of course, like, crackers have relatively long shelf lives. But, like, I guess they're allowed to bring, like, and I've seen, Gabri on World All-Stars brought like chilies, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, interesting.
Something like that, which is like a shelf stable.
Yeah,
it's going to last for the course of the competition. And stuff
it was
like
just
that.
Funny to me when she was like house made rye crackers. I was like, what house? Not this house. Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
But yeah. Okay. So then, remind me, what was Anya's second dish?
So what happened next was Anya at some point burned onions.
Yes, her onions.
Yeah, and she had to start over from scratch. And I thought that Bailey kind of got her next two dishes. Like, she got the crackers and dipping.
Yeah,
and
pretty
and
quick
the
succession.
Lamb dish, like, right there. She kind of nailed it, right? She was like, to your very point, she had all three going, and they kind of all hit in, like, the 30 to 40 minute mark. And then Anya, did she have, like, I thought Anya had two dishes that were, like negated by Tom. I can't
Anya
remember what the second
two
one
dishes. So I can't remember what the second one was, but the last one was like a scallop.
Scallop with orange, like that's the one I remember.
Literal orange juice.
It was literally like one scallop sliced into thirds with a couple like pieces of orange and just like orange juice squeezed over the plate. And I've never seen this happen, but Tom just has a bite and goes, "This is terrible." I was dying, and it was like it looked bad. Poor Anya. I think like you, how do you not have like a? I understand it taking a minute to get the first like dish out, uh-huh. like 30 minutes or so. But like, just get food out. I think maybe she didn't realize. Maybe they both didn't realize how low the bar truly was. Because I think if Tom was like, "This is edible," he would have just let them both through. He wants, I think, two people going forward in the Last Chance Kitchen.
Yeah.
And she just couldn't get it together.
Look, I mean, so listeners, right after this catch up on Last Chance Kitchen, you will listen to our interview with Miss Bailey Sullivan. So, you know, she has a lot to say, and I don't want to steal her thunder, but she talks about how like Last Chance Kitchen and the main competition are for like two totally different types of chef.
Right.
And that, you know, it also is just like, for her, it was this really meditative and sort of like cathartic moment of reset. Mm. And I think that some people really seize the opportunity of Last Chance Kitchen and they're just like, you know what? I've got nothing to lose and I only have to beat one person.
Yep.
And they take this really sort of like cool attitude towards it. And some people are really hung up on the elimination of it all and, yep. you know, like just can't get out of that headspace. And totally. I kind of think that's what we're seeing with Anya. And that's, you know, not in any way to negate her skill. Like she showed us some great stuff while she was on the show. But I think it just, this was a perfect illustration of like the two types of competitors yeah. and how they react to stimuli.
I think that's a great point. Yeah. And like Anya even references that she didn't love the clock in the main competition. Like yeah. the hours that they got were hard for her. And I think to your very point, for some people, like it sounds like Bailey, the short, compressed one-on-one time is just like clarifying. Like you mm-hmm. don't overthink, you just go. I think we've seen people over the years, including Kristen, just like really sharpen like in that environment. And Anya's like, yeah, really, it was a bit too much. I mean, I wonder how much better she would have done if Sam had stayed and they did the no yeah. clock, three dishes version of things.
Well, we'll never know. Might have worked out.
We'll never know.
But anyway, that's a good segue. Unless you have anything, any last thoughts on this very early part of the season, Saul, closing thoughts?
Closing thoughts? No, just I'm super psyched about it. I will say our fantasy top chef this season is going, it's more competitive than we've ever seen.
Uh-huh.
It's a tight race right now.
Yes, I will use this moment to enthusiastically plug the LA Food Podcast, particularly the episodes around the Top Chef Fantasy League, which Bits and I are participating in this year. I mean, we're all getting our asses beat, so yeah, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, yeah. Jesse, who's a food influencer here in LA, is for the second year running, just crushing it.
Right on the money.
It's my favorite thing we do. It's so lovely to have you guys on it. And yeah, I can't wait till the next time we chat.
Yes. So everybody, please go visit the LA Food Pod or on Instagram, LA Food Countdown. Both of those things are great. And without further ado, enjoy this interview with Bailey Sullivan. Welcome back to Compliments to the Chef. I'm your host, Nancy, and Bits is still out of town, but I am so excited because once again, I am joined by an incredible member of the Top Chef cinematic universe. And not only is she a great member of Top Chef, but she is a very new entrant to the Top Chef cinematic universe. Please welcome to the podcast season 22 chef testant, Bailey Sullivan. Welcome.
Ciao. It is so exciting to be here, Nancy. Thank you for having me.
The pleasure is all ours. We're so excited to get to talk to someone who is in the mix. I should also mention that Bailey is the current reigning champion of Last Chance Kitchen. For those who are up to date, this is week 3. So we've seen 3 episodes of Last Chance Kitchen. Bailey has come out on top twice. So congratulations on that. We'll get to that in a second. But the first where we kind of wanted to start is because, you know, we didn't really get to spend a ton of time with you on the main show. And normally, you know, when we go on these journeys, we get to learn about someone's past. And so I want to give you a moment to just talk to us a little about how you became a chef, why, some of the most important moments in your chef career, and then we'll talk about the show.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, obviously not the goal to get out so early, but, you know, you make some risks and you're in a crazy environment. It's my first time doing TV, so it was pretty wild for me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's cooking has just always been something that I have loved. And from a young age, you know, I grew up, my dad has been in the industry his whole life. He owns this bar in Forest Park that he's had for, I don't know, over 40 something years now, Goldie Burgers, which is amazing. And so I grew up like running around the restaurant and just like being in the mix, seeing like, you know, the repeat customers, the regulars, just like understanding what that sense of community that, you know, being in a restaurant environment builds. And I kind of just was attached to it from the start. So then, you know, my dad signed me up for some cooking classes when I was young. I loved it. Like, at first they were like, you're too young to hold a knife. I was like, Dad, do I lie about my age? And he was like, we'll play it cool. I'll talk to him. And then they were like, all right, we'll let you hold a knife. So that was pretty exciting for a 10-year-old. And from there, you know, I went to high school. We had like a great cooking program at my high school, which was incredible.
Wow. Rare.
So I did a little bit through that, through FCCLA, it was called. Went to culinary school in Chicago, and I've been in Chicago ever since. I did my internship at this kind of like New England vibe restaurant, is like a Michelin restaurant called Acadia. Mm-hmm. Stayed on a little bit after that. Then went to Yusho in Logan Square, which is like my pirate ship kitchen of my dreams. I loved it so much. Then went to Parachute, worked with Beverly Kim for a little bit there. Mm-hmm. And then I've been at Monteverde for almost 9 years now, which is pretty wild.
Wow. Congratulations. I am so excited to hear you mention like a lot about going to culinary school in Chicago, and you and Zubair like right out the gate sort of like did a little fist bump of being from Chicago. Can you talk a little about your relationship to the city of Chicago? Also, friend of the pod, Joe Flam, huge Chicago advocate. And so talk a little bit about your experience in the Chicago food scene and how that brought you to where you are now.
Yeah, absolutely. And Joe's also amazing. Both Southside Irish vibes. So my dad growing up on the Southside loved it. So even going to the parade with him as a young kid, it's cool to see somebody else in the cooking scene also doing that in Chicago. But yeah, I have a deep, deep love of Chicago. You know, I've always been someone who wants to travel, but I feel like I never can. Like, I never want to go somewhere and work somewhere in a different city because I can't leave Chicago. Like, I just, I love it too much. You know, even just, you know, my dad being in the restaurant industry, we used to drive down to the city. And, you know, in the area that's sort of like Fulton Market, you know, it used to be like the meatpacking industry. And we would go pick up, you know, different cuts, you know, to grind down for his burgers. Or we would go to the seafood market and like pick up like perch and things like that for like Lent season at the restaurant. Because, you know, it's like,
what do you do deal. With a Yeah, what do you do at a burger restaurant during Lent?
Yeah, exactly. And so I just have, you know, a ton of memories of always being in the city at a young age. The town I grew up in is only about 30 minutes outside of Chicago. So it used to be, you know, we would go there almost every weekend if we were lucky. And it's just, you know, Chicago from the people to the architecture to the restaurants. Mm-hmm. There's, I don't know, I just love it all. I love it all.
It's a great town. I went to college there. I have a strong affinity for it, and some of the best meals of my life in Chicago. So it's an incredible place to sort of like cut your teeth. But that said, let's talk a little bit about your journey to and on Top Chef. So you, of course, famously have worked with some Top Chef alums, but curious about what your relationship to the show was before you joined. Did you watch it growing up? Was it always an aspiration for you? or was it something that sort of came to you out of luck?
So I definitely grew up watching Food TV. You know, mm-hmm. I think I started in the early days of Food Network. And, you know, at that point, it was like kind of a little bit more like silly shows, you know what I mean? Or like more casual for the home cook kind of TV.
I was a big Elton Brown girl.
Oh, man. I wrote a paper about how I wanted to be Elton Brown when I grew up.
No way.
So, yes, big fan.
Game recognized, sure.
You know, I remember watching Project Runway growing up pretty, like, religiously as well. And I remember seeing the commercials for, like, Bravo has this new show, Top Chef. And I was like, what is that? You know, and I was quite young on the first season. And I remember just being glued to the television, just like, I had never understood up until that point what food could be, like what people could do with it and how you could just, you know, create and share with the world in a different level than I had ever seen before, you know, on a different scale. And so I, you know, grew up watching it and loving it. And I think it made me realize I was like, oh, this is actually something I can do, and I can have a restaurant one day, and I can be like these people one day. And so I think it's always been a tender place in my heart, because I grew up on it, and to be on it, like, just that is so surreal in itself. You know, it was something in the back of my head that I always was like, yeah, I'd like to do that. I'd like to get there one day. I love to compete. I'm a very competitive person. And then, you know, it culminated in this, and now we're here. So it's just been a wild ride.
I too am grateful for Top Chef's existence, because here I am just talking about it. So it is, it's so great. And I relate to you in terms of watching it growing up and just sort of being enamored of the elite nature of the show, because I'm assuming, as someone who also watched a ton of like sillier food shows, Top Chef always stands out as this really prestigious place where very good chefs get to go, and it's not games. It's like, it's the real deal. And so I'm curious about like what it is like to be among this incredibly elite group of top chefs, and what sort of like what it means to you.
I mean, it means the world. It was so exciting to get that call and be like, you've been cast on this season. And I remember just being like, nope, like me, like, are you sure that there's not somebody else that like wants to, like, you know, I was just so nervous. And, you know, you go through the process of applying, and then you're just, you know, it happens all so quickly. And so it just gave me a moment for pause, because you want to go on this show and be the most prepared you could ever be, right? But you can never be the most prepared, really. Like, you, at some point you have to rip off the Band-Aid and say, hey, I'm going to do it, you know? Yep. And there were so many times where I was like, maybe I should wait a couple of years, or maybe I should do this or that. And, you know, finally my lovely support group of people in Chicago were like, go and do this show, and you know, you'll crush it. And I got there, and, you know, coming from the restaurant, coming from being, you know, part of the Chicago food scene, I was like, okay, I feel like really confident. I'm feeling good about going into this. And then I got there and I was like, oh my God, I don't think I've like been in this like sort of incubator vibe with like 14 other incredibly badass chefs. And it psyched me out. You know, I really didn't want it to, but it psyched me out. I was like, you know, like, I had known, you know, Katiana's background. I was like, what the F? Like, what am I doing here? And then, you know, Vinny's like, oh yeah, I won like the Bocuse d'Or, like, we got a gold medal. And like, you know, Zubair's like, oh, I'm opening my third restaurant tomorrow. And I was like, but you're here. And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. I work at a restaurant. So, you know, like, it's just, it was like a real shock to me because I just had like endless respect for all of these people. And, you know, as they're listing off where they worked, what they've done, I, you know, had a moment of doubt and I was like, I don't know if I should be here. And so, you know, I really wasn't cooking the food that I wanted to cook in the first two challenges and quick fires. I think I was just like trying to go sort of into survival mode.
Okay.
And what I found myself doing was like things that I hadn't like sort of cooking food that I don't normally cook. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't normally make a bunch of tarts, like, but I practiced making a tart like once before the show. So like in my brain, I was like, yeah, just make that tart you practiced once. That was good. Right. Like instead of, hey, make all these things that you make endlessly, you know, throughout years and years of cooking Italian food. Like, why are you not making those things, Bailey? But it's like the wheels start rolling and then you kind of feel like you can't go back at a point. But then, you know, I think getting to Last Chance Kitchen really shook me up because it wasn't, you know, I wasn't performing at the level that I wanted to be. And I wasn't cooking food that made me truly happy. And at Monteverde, we always say that like love is the one ingredient you can't taste, but if it's not there, it's, you know, there's, you gotta have soul and love in your food. And so I think having that, you know, you're getting kicked off moment really put me like put things into perspective for me. And I think it just helped me really recenter to go, okay, I need to take a step back, reassess, just focus on me, like put the blinders up. This is like your moment to just cook food that makes you happy. And that's all it has to be. And you can't think about what the judges want or, you know, what accolades all the people around you have or, oh, my God, Whole Foods Market doesn't have this, this, this. You know what I mean? There's just like little things that stop you up. And then you look back and you're like, how did I get here? And so, yeah, I don't know. I wanted to go in being like, I'm going to crush this. But to be honest, it was like a crazy experience for me. And
I mean, I can't even imagine the anticipation of it and then the reality of it. And I think that, I mean, first what I'll say and something that we've talked about and, you know, we keep an eye on the internet. I think what a lot of people online are saying is like, this year's chefs are a cut above. Like, it is an exceptional group of people this year. And so to perform the way you did, I think like on a lot of other seasons, your performance thus far probably would have gotten you a lot farther in the season. You're just, you know, up against some really incredible people this season. So that's, you know, from a truly like Monday morning quarterback perspective is what it looks like on our end. But I want to touch on a few things that you mentioned because there's so much in there that you talked about and it's so interesting to hear about it firsthand. So first thing I'd love to take just a tiny step back and talk about how you prepared for the show. You talk a little bit about, you know, like, okay, well, I prepped a tart once and I thought I could do it. Or, you know, like you have relationships and friendships with certain Top Chef alumni. Can you talk a little, we talked to Savannah Miller, who was finalist last season. And she was like, oh yeah, my husband used to time me running around Whole Foods. Like, what did you do to prepare on the to be on the show and to perform? And how did you get yourself into the headspace to go on?
Yeah, just talking about Whole Foods in itself, I think I have probably 60 photos of like three different Whole Foods layouts. And then I got to Canada and I was like, oh, this is not the same at all. They don't have a lot of the same things that they have in the US, which like, you know, I think is also such like the American brain to be like, oh yeah, like why wouldn't my Chicago Whole Foods have the same things and, you know, as you know, the ones in Canada. But yeah, you know, I definitely took some time. I took like a week and I went to a cabin and just kind of like in the middle of nowhere. because I felt like I just had to like emotionally prepare myself for it. I'm like a hugely anxious person. Like I've dealt with this my whole life, and you know, I'm pretty good with anxiety now, like especially in terms of working in the kitchen I work in every day. But then I was like, okay, now you're going to be on national television. So, you know, that was like a big piece for me is like, okay, try to like get your mental game solidified. And then I just went out there, bought a ton of ingredients, and I was just kind of cooking in this little cabin, you know, just doing kind of anything that I was worried about or thought that I might come like up against in a challenge or a quick fire. So like, you know, I made French fries and, you know, which I was like, when's the last time I made French fries? Like I couldn't tell you, probably like culinary school. And then, you know, I did like a couple different things. Like I bought different proteins that I don't normally cook or work with and, you know, just kind of made different dishes. Chef Sarah is my mentor, obviously. And, you know, she was on Top Chef Texas. And at that point, it was, you know, a lot of it in its core is the same, but also a lot of it has changed as, you know, we're just, you know, in 2025 now. But, you know, I went to her house and she'd be like, here's like four things, make something. And I would be like, okay.
Oh my God.
And that was really fun though, because, you know, we would just be like having a sip of wine, testing. So it was like stressful-ish, but not to the point that I was like what it feels like there, you know?
Of course.
But I think a big part of it was me trying not to psych myself out, but then I'm like I'm a real planner. I like lists a lot, organization a lot. and so I felt like I had to do all these things that like I had to do them or else like, you know, I wouldn't be good going into the show. And then I think I focused on those things too much. And then I was like, why are you trying to, why try to do the things that you know aren't second nature? Like cook the food you know. And then if you get into that situation where someone's like, you have to make a tart or else, you know, like then okay, then do it. But like why do it when you don't need to do it? So you know, you make crazy decisions.
I think that's very honest like reflection. And it's something that you know, we talk a lot about on the show or on our podcast and like I think in general people talk about is like there's always this dichotomy. And I remember the first person we ever interviewed on the pod was Jen Carroll from season six, who's like a goddess to us.
Oh, true goddess.
And we asked her, we said, you know, like there's the classic battle between like cook your food and cook what the judges want to see.
Yeah.
And she sort of grinned and she was like, that is the eternal battle on Top Chef because as a contestant, you sort of feel like I have to do what the judges want. Like, are you kidding me? If I don't do what they want, I'm not going to get through. But then you see people answering the prompt in a way that you would have never answered it. That's so true to them. And you're just like, I now understand how I could have done that in a way that was true to me.
Oh, yeah.
And it sounds very similar to what you're describing right now. And I think it's like, but she was laughing. She was like, that's the hardest part of the whole game. Like the judges.
I think it's a self-sabotage. Like there's things that I did that I was just, you know, like you're doing them and you're like, why am I doing this? Why am I doing this? You know, but yeah, that's why. Like you can't, I think you can't think about what the judges want. Like you just have to cook what speaks to you. And sometimes it's going to hit and sometimes it won't. And but when you cook food that doesn't feel true to you and it's not good, which it probably isn't going to be good, at least for me. If I cook food that doesn't feel like me, I'm like, what is this? You know, and so that's what's going to kill you, though, is when you cook the food that isn't your food and then it's bad and then you have to deal with the consequences of it. Like that's what stays with you. But if you put it all out there and you have to lean into the challenge, you cannot fight it. That is a big mistake that I learned. You cannot fight the challenge, lean into it. And then if you cook what you love and then it's still not good, it doesn't bother you in the same. because at least you're like, that was me and it felt right to me, true to me. So they didn't like it. Oh, well, like that you can move past and be fine with.
That is a very beautiful reflection. But let's switch to talk about a place where, like, you do seem to be thriving and you even of your own, you know, admissions say, like, you totally changed your mindset going to Last Chance Kitchen. So let's talk a little bit about your current run on Last Chance Kitchen to close this out. And just give us a little bit about, like, to me, Last Chance Kitchen just seems like it's sort of Tom's playground. Like, he's so happy to be there and it's just having a blast. And so – can you talk to us a little bit about first, like, what is the energy of Last Chance Kitchen and how is it different from the main show?
Last Chance Kitchen is scary, just like the real show. They're both pretty scary, at least for me. Always terrified is my theme. But it's also, I think, allows you to kind of go into your own zone. At least that's how it felt to me. Like when you're running around and there's like 14 other people around you, it's a lot, you know? And so when you can say, okay, there's only like three of us cooking, like, first of all, you get some more space, which is really nice. And then you kind of just have the capacity, I think, to be in your own bubble. At least that's what I tried to do. The biggest thing for me was like, I need to go into this having fun. And I need to not be scared. It involved a lot of like pumping myself up. Like my thing was like just little songs in my head and I would just dance like right before going out because you have to pump yourself up. You know what I mean? But, but I don't know. I think it just made me feel like I wasn't competing against 14 other people. It made me feel like I was competing against like one or two other people. And to me, it felt like it felt more possible, I guess, to me in the moment. And then I was always very like nervous about Tom, but Last Chance Kitchen, like, I feel like we become like BFFs now. Like we're chilling, like, you know, it's like a one-way friendship where like, I want to be his friend. And he's like, maybe like, let's give it some time. But I don't know. I just felt like I was able to focus and be really, just engage with what I was doing. And that helped me a lot.
Yeah, that's super nice. And I feel like a lot of times we see Tom saying like, you know, some of the best food of the season is coming out of Last Chance Kitchen. And I imagine it's for a lot of the reasons that you're saying, where it's just, it's a different headspace. And to use your words, it feels more possible. So you're cooking maybe with a little more confidence, just like a little more pizzazz. And it's almost this feeling of like, nothing to lose, just going to do my best here. And that's all I can do.
I think it pushes you harder in a way, because like when in the first challenge, like I was like, I just need to survive. Like, I just need to like get through this. And then I'm going to start like trying to understand what this beast that is Top Chef is. But when you get to Last Chance Kitchen, you're like, okay, well, I have a 50% chance I'm going home, or I have a 33% chance I'm going home, and, or not even 66%. And like, so, you know, when you put it like that, I think it kind of pushes you to be like, there's no other option. Like, you either have to win this or you're going home. And this time it's for real, for real. So make it count and like lay it all out there.
Yeah.
Like, I think when you're in the competition, there's 14 other people to a point. You're like, okay, if I can just kind of coast, I can keep moving forward. But in Last Chance Kitchen, you're kind of like, you got to cook and it's got to be fucking good. And then see you later, Canada. So that's a long flight. I didn't want to go back home. So.
It's a long flight. Yeah. So let's talk about some of the dishes that you made. Because you said, you know, like in Last Chance Kitchen, you were cooking with a little more love, a little more soul. The first dish you made really stood out because it, as you've explained it, I'm like, oh, that makes so much sense. The agrodolce that you made. It was like a squash agrodolce, right? With a, what was it, Canadian bacon? So let's just
with the pea male bacon, which was very cool.
Yes, that's what it was. So yeah, let's talk about some of the dishes you've made on Last Chance Kitchen. Let's start with that one and talk about why you feel like it was more successful than what you did on the show.
Oh, totally. Yeah, big time, way more successful than when I did.
Because you were the winner of that challenge. You didn't just cook a good dish. You took the three dishes. You took it.
Yeah, it was good. It felt good. It felt like a reset for me, which was what I needed. I needed a mental reset, and I had to do it before. And then I was like, okay, this is working. See, this is working. Like, keep doing this. And so, yeah, the first dish was really fun because, you know, being an avid watcher of Top Chef, the first one you do when you get eliminated, you kind of think you know what the theme is going to be, right? Because it's always somewhat loosely related to the challenge. And so I was like, it's going to be maple. Like, it's going to be maple something. And you're going to have to figure it out. And you're definitely not going to make a pastry. So, like, what are you going to do? And so I had actually just been thinking about all these, like, different maple ideas in my head. And then, of course, you walk in, and then Tom's like, here's pea male bacon. And you're like,
damn it.
I thought it was going to be maple. But the really good thing about pea male bacon is that it goes excellent with maple. So I was like, all right, just lean into it. Like, it's going to be cool. And pea male bacon could be, like, varying levels of, like, brined, cured. And this pea male is, like, beautiful. And I think when you just have something in front of you that's like a beautiful ingredient, like you're just like, okay, I just want to like celebrate it. And that's it. It makes it easier, I feel like, when you're cooking. You know what I mean? And so I was like, oh, this is going to be just a beautiful pork chop, basically. And so just cut the loins. You know, I love pimentone. I think, you know, we use it a lot at Monteverde. Smoked paprika. It's got like really great depth of flavor. And then, you know, I was kind of thinking, I was like, okay, so it's kind of like smoky, grilled, mapley, put a little like labneh on there, a little like dilly yogurt. And then I was like, oh, a little jus never hurts anything. And, you know, and then like at that point, though, like that's like the difference is like, I was like, oh, I'm vibing. Like I'm having fun. I'm feeling the food and I'm working with it. Whereas prior to that moment, I was like, what am I doing? Why are you doing this? You know what I mean? So but it's all the difference. It's like cooking with love and joy and confidence versus, you know, just trying to survive, and it makes all the difference. And, you know, ultimately I think all of us came on this show because we love food and we love cooking. And that was one of my favorite parts about it, was just getting to talk nonstop food with everyone all the time. And that's what you just need to recenter yourself, because there's so many distractors. There's like, you know, a camera up in your face. Next person's asking you like, what are you cooking, Bailey? And you're like, I can't physically talk right now. And so, you know, but then when you're just like, oh, it's just cooking. It's just cooking. Like, then you're like, okay, it's not so scary anymore.
That's awesome. So to close it out, what, and you've started to, it's a good segue from your most recent answers, like, what are your biggest takeaways? We know we have not seen the last of you because you're still going on Last Chance Kitchen, but you in this moment in March of 2025, what are your big takeaways from the experience?
Yeah, the biggest takeaway, I feel like I've said it, you know, a million times here already, but I can't say it enough. Just cook what you know, and cook with love, and cook what makes you happy. And forget about everything else, even though it feels overwhelming and crazy and stressful. All you can control is what you can control. You can't decide what the person next to you is doing, what the challenge is, what the judging is. Like, that's all outside of your control. So just control what you can and then live with it. And if you're proud of it, it doesn't matter so much what somebody else is going to say, because what really matters is how you represent yourself, if you cook the food that you want to cook. And from there, it's pretty, it gets easier.
It's so beautiful. I feel like I'm leaving this interview with so much optimism and joy, and I just appreciate that perspective from you. And so want to give you a moment to promote anything that you're currently working on, or tell the people where they can find you and follow you in your post Top Chef journey.
Yes. So you can always find me at Monteverde Restaurant in Chicago. We make pasta to order. It's all of our handmade pasta is really beautiful. Come say hi. I'm basically always there. On April 14th, we've got a really fun dinner coming up, inspired by Chef Sarah and my travel with our leadership team at Monteverde. We went to London and Firenze, and so we're doing like a little like Euro trip dinner, which is gonna be super cute.
Yum.
You can buy tickets on that. We're partnered with Resy on that, and then you know, I think just always a great awareness moment I like to spread is for Southern Smoke Foundation, an incredible charity outside or that started in Houston but has expanded across the U.S. And it also helps always support anyone in the food industry. So, you know, whether it's a natural disaster, you lose your job, you have a family emergency. It's an incredible charity that we love supporting at Monteverde all the time, that helps industry folks, whether you're a barista, a farmer, a head chef, a dishwasher. And they're also working on something called Behind You, which is a mental health program that works with different states. I believe it's in 11 states right now and growing, but provides free mental health for folks in the industry. Again, doesn't matter if you're a vendor, anybody, if you're in the industry, you can apply and be a part of it. So we just did a dinner in Houston a few days ago, raised $50,000, which was amazing.
Wow.
And just a great charity that I think doesn't get talked about enough in the industry that, you know, is for people in the industry, by people in the industry. And I just always like to preach it if anybody.
Thank you for sharing. I would say through this podcast, we've really learned the food industry is an incredibly philanthropic bunch. And it is a group that looks after its own and really cares about food and who eats it and what we're eating. And so it's always nice to hear a plug for a great organization.
Absolutely.
With that, Bailey, thank you so much for joining us this week. It is so exciting to get to talk to you. We wish you the best of luck in all of your endeavors. And to everybody listening, tune in for our coverage of episode 4 this week on Compliments to the Chef. Bye.
And check Last Chance Kitchen after.
Hey.